Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jeremy.
We've been doing this for 6 months now.
Has it been that long, really?
Yes. And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly?
I'm still waiting to find out.
It is this. It's this what we're doing. We're trying to figure it out. It's a work in progress. So basically, that's the joke of the opening is we really haven't decided. Is this a cute little news update and tidbit about tabletop gaming? Is this a list of Kickstarters that you should take a look at? What is this? And I guess it's just a way to keep our noses to the gaming grindstone and actually like force ourselves to have done something,
right.
So we have something to talk about. And the same way that Nick, who was on the podcast last week, he's been doing Twitch streaming of his miniature painting because it forces him to paint. You know,
because
if there's people that are gonna show up and talk to you, it's like, well, I feel now responsible. I have to get there. So that's kind of what this is so far. And if you have any ideas about what this should be and what this shouldn't be, get in touch with us. I mean, we're definitely open to suggestions, comments, and criticism. We're still trying to figure it out. So what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It's this thing that we do every week.
Constructive criticism.
Yes, of course. Of course. Yeah. I mean, you can say all sorts of terrible things, but that probably won't change what we're doing.
It's funny you brought that up, especially about Nick streaming his painting sessions on Twitch with the intention of that causing him to sort of paint more often. Because I think I recently kind of came to the conclusion that given my current situation with a kid and a full-time job, that wanting to create more TTRPG content was causing me stress. And had become like a burden and seemed like a responsibility. Mm-hmm. And honestly, part of the reason I set up the Fantastic Fate Resources Patreon was something similar, to kind of have people I felt somewhat beholden to as a motivator to get me to do stuff. Mm-hmm. More often than not, especially recently with like people being sick and me having to do like stints of solo parroting essentially, that has moved to work.
Mm.
For me, and I'm not sure if I like that. So for some people, being responsible to other people works as a great motivator. I don't think that's the case for me, and I'm still kind of figuring that out. I'll say doing this has remained fun, mostly because I'm not having to do any of the editing.
Right, yes. When the editing is off the plate, it is much more fun because you can just say ridiculous things and be like, I don't know if he's going to leave that in, but I'll give it a shot. I think an audience is a great motivator, especially with my cartoon. I felt that very much. I felt much more responsible to stay on schedule and do that. People are always saying, you know, do what you love and make that your job. But when something you love or enjoy turns into work, the enjoyment does disappear if you're not careful.
So, I've seen it recently that phrase, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. But there's like a second part that is like something like you'll grow to hate what you do. And I fully subscribe to that one. It's like, doing something you like for work, my thought eventually causes you to not like that thing.
Yeah, I think for your work, just do something you're good at so it's easy.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I think that's the best advice. Have you been up to anything this week?
This week, no, because sick kid, sick partner.
Oh, that's right.
I'm solo parenting for a while, which means I'm not doing anything. Last Sunday, I played in a two-player and one GM trophy game. My first time playing that. I think it's an interesting game. It's kind of, you have to want to watch your character fail because the whole thing is about, you're probably not going to escape this forest. You know, you're kind of like a doomed treasure hunter. It's fairly simple mechanics, but before you roll the dice on anything risky, the table asks, what's something that could go wrong here? It's a way of giving the players feedback on how their character fails. I mean, there's still a GM facilitating the game, and they don't have to take that on board. They could have other things, but it's kind of like, I think it helps give the players ownership over what their character does, as well as it kind of, in not so many words, say, what are you comfortable happening in this situation? And also, what are you hoping to achieve in this situation? Kind of the reverse of that. So I like that mechanic. Hopefully I'll get to play more of it. This Sunday, I'm going to be playing in a Girl Underground game, part of the Kansai Jig monthly one-shot, which is kind of like an Alice in Wonderland-esque thing, I believe the players play as kind of magical animal-esque companion characters to an Alice in Wonderland style kind of central figure. After that, complete 180, I'm also playing in a game of Forbidden Lands.
Nice.
So we'll see how that goes as well.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm curious to see, because you played the Alien RPG, what you think about how they handle the Year Zero or the intricacies of that version. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that too. So how about yourself?
I pre-ordered and eventually I'm going to do an unboxing very soon, the Aeronautica Imperialis.
Ooh.
The plastic. So previously it was a Forge World all resin plane. So it's
ridiculously expensive.
Yes, yes. So basically it was just like
a hardcover book and then a bunch of expensive models.
Right.
Now it's a plastic kit and they did a starter set. And they kind of made the mistake that X-Wing did. And I'll get into this in the unboxing. But what they give you is not really enough to play with. And right. in the rule book, they give you one scenario. So you're going to dogfight 100 times to learn the rules. And then so you have to buy the hardback book with the campaign in it and further rules explanations. And I think they're hurting themselves getting new players into the game, because just like X-Wing, it's going to be unsatisfying just with what you get in the starter set. And you do have to immediately invest in more models to actually expand things. And even the map, they give you like a paper map. It's a hex-based game, which I usually stay away from. But originally the game was on hex bases so that you have kind of arcs of arcs of fire.
Okay. Yep.
And so that made sense, but you were still measuring. This is all hex-based. So what it does is it takes the kind of oddity. You don't have any templates or anything you're laying down for maneuvers. You're just counting hexes.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked that idea, and they really updated the hex-based, so it has your airspeed and altitude little dials on the side. And the reason that I went for that over X-Wing or Wings of Glory is not pre-painted.
These are
you know, Games Workshop plastic model kits, and they're gorgeous. They're so intricate, so detailed, and really enjoyable. And I was realizing that, especially with the other side, we were kind of talking about they're pre-assembled.
Okay.
And that's frustrating when you have to undo some factory worker's bad glue job.
Oh, you're talking about like X-Wing stuff?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So when you get pre-assembled pre-painted models, you look at it, it's like, this is not, it's painted well for pre-painted, right. But I can do better. So I have to prime this and repaint a model that was painted in a factory, and I'm paying for that paint job already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Compared to that, like what these models look like on the table is just amazing. And they've got a lot of customization that you can do. And so it's really nice looking. And I'm just hoping it gets support, because there's a lot of factions. You know, they still have Tau and Eldar and Chaos that they
can
release.
Are they actually Eldar? Eldari and the Drukhari.
That's right. Yeah, we had to. For legal purposes, we've renamed everything.
They're legally distinct entities now, yeah.
So included in the starter set is Imperial Navy and Orcs. And
Orcs.
They're great, yeah. Reading the Siege of Terra books really got me into it, because they are doing, you know, they're doing the Void battle, then they're doing the Skies Above Terra, and that section was excellent, and I was just really excited. The timing, obviously, somebody in marketing is thinking well, because if you're reading that book and then they're releasing an air dogfight game, you're like, oh, this is excellent. Yeah, I really want to.
That sounds pretty cool.
I'll unbox that and get everything painted. It seems really easy to jump into a game, so we can give that a shot sometime.
I know what you mean about games kind of starter sets not really giving you enough to play with, because while I've played X-Wing, I didn't get sucked into it. I was getting into Netrunner around the same time that I think Lyle was getting into X-Wing. Mm-hmm. You want to keep the point of entry fairly cheap, and I'm not saying these games are cheap. It does feel not great to open up a box and go, oh, this is it, and to not really have enough to play what feels like a full game with. Ran into that problem a little bit with Netrunner core boxes, where they gave you one or two copies of a card instead of the full three copies.
Right. Yeah.
We were kind of like, okay, like I can build a deck, it works, it shows me what it does, but it doesn't really feel like a real kind of solid game. In pre-painted plastic miniature things is tricky, because I think we possibly skew more towards the hobby side.
Right.
Not saying we ignore the game part, but there are people who definitely skew more towards like the game side. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand why there's pre-painted miniatures, because some people don't want to deal with that. But I'm right there with you when I look at a pre-painted model and go, I'm going to have to rip this apart and repaint it. And yeah.
Yeah, I think cutting something off of a sprue and assembling it and painting it is satisfying in its accomplishment, and fixing somebody else's mistakes is just frustrating. And like, what?
I never looked at it that way.
Yeah,
but
why am I doing this? Yeah. So they're trying to get as many people into the hobby as you said, and I think that is a barrier to entry. It's like, I have to what?
Yeah. When I worked at a GW for a fairly short time, like the number of parents who would come in, looking for video games, and we have to direct them down to the other end of the shopping mall. but like one of our things was like, we almost had to get people into demo games or like little games. But the number of times parents would go, these are model kits you have to assemble. They don't come looking like that. And you're like, no, sorry. And that would turn people off.
Another thing that I did, and I guess I referenced it, talking about the Aeronautica, is I finished The Lost and the Damned.
Okay.
So that's the second volume of The Siege of Terra. And so the first, the Solar War, was all Void, you know, the large ship battles in space, and it was wonderful, and it made me want to
bust out Battlefleet Gothic?
Battlefleet Gothic, yeah, and it made me like, oh, I want to see that, because the writers are doing a really good job of giving you that Baroque, just over the top, like the imagery is just insane.
And the mile-long spaceships that take like an hour to turn.
Right. Yeah. So this is actual Planetfall. This is actually like landing on the planet, and it's the first siege of the actual walls of the palace, the Imperial Palace. And it's great. I mean, it's just like, it really, I think I'm a kind of a perfect victim for this series of stories because I've read just enough of the Horse Heresy for it to be dangerous. So everything they reference, I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, that's so cool.
I know what that is.
Yeah. So I have a kind of, I'm not too saturated in the lore that I'm like, oh, right. Oh, they didn't quite do that right. Or, oh, shouldn't he be taller? You know, I don't have those kinds of criticisms. I can just, and I'm totally leaning into that because there are so few things that I can get enjoyment from anymore that if something is simple and stupid and fun, I'm all for it because so many things are tainted by your nostalgia or whatever. And fortunately, this isn't one of those things. The Lost and the Damned is a second volume by Guy Haley. And in a couple of months, the kind of retail version will be out. And it's definitely worth picking up. This kind of focuses on the World Eaters and Angron.
Okay.
So he is now, a demon prince and lands. And it's amazing. So, and you get a lot more of the kind of traitor side in conflict with each other.
In fighting, yeah.
Yes. And there's so many kind of moving parts to the story. I think that's what's fun about it. They've kind of created all of these kind of ticking clocks.
Oh, cool.
And that really is ramping up the tension. So it helps. I'm wondering though, if you can continue that for 8 books.
I would suspect not. Right. Just not anything against the writers. Just I think that would be pretty impossible to do.
Yeah. So I think they're going to have to take focus. Even though it is Siege of Terror, they're going to have to take a little bit of focus away because right now they're pounding at the walls of the palace. And where do you go from there? You still got 6 books. But I'm really enjoying it. And I would suggest anyone that has enjoyed those books in the past to pick up those, at least when they get to paperback or mass market. They're definitely worth it to get to that point, that magic moment that we've seen.
I'm kind of laughing because I think the series might break down into a 6-book dungeon crawl of the Palace of Terror. And that's just all it is.
It very well could be. Yeah,
Lavish descriptions of each room they tromp through. And you're just like, oh, this is it for 6 books. All right.
Yeah, because they've got so much foreshadowing and so much because from illustrations, those final scenes and who dies and who is injured and what happens. But they're doing a nice job of still creating tension. I think as far as if you're considering this Horse Heresy prequel to what you know about 40K, they're handling it much better than other people have done with prequels because they're giving you detail and tension that wouldn't really have been there. And they're not spoiling anything by going, oh, that's how it happened or that's what it's like. Yeah. It's just enjoyable. So that was part of the reason that I got drawn into the Aeronautica Imperialis because they had some great dogfight scenes. So once they're breaking the Aegis shield that's protecting Terra, they start getting ships into Earth's atmosphere or Terra's atmosphere. And that's good stuff.
Really, I'm trying to imagine Battlefleet Gothic size ships making planetfall.
Well, they do. That's part of the Dark Mechanicum. That's one of the strategies. It's like, we're just going to land these ships that are never meant to be landed on the planet and use that as our base of operation.
Well, okay. So, assuming you survive going down. Yeah, it makes sense.
Good stuff. Yeah, definitely worth checking out. I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, it's enjoyable.
The only books of 40K I've read are The Horus Heresy, the trilogy book, and I think something about Eisenhorn. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed them and how, knowing what happens at the end of The Horus Heresy, they're, as you said, it didn't feel kind of rushed or cheap. I'm kind of like, oh, like I know where the story ends, but I'm actually enjoying the journey we have to take of getting there. Mm-hmm. And I was also really surprised at how different they made the Space Marines. Because, I mean, the joke is like, okay, you're a genetic clone of the Emperor. How much different are you going to be from your battle brothers? This is going to be like real boring. Oh, we're going to watch Space Marines role play in character. This will be great. And oh, this is actually pretty good. They actually have different characters. And yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, it's kind of what made me want to do that Death Watch game.
Yeah.
And inspire that, where I'm like, oh, okay, you can actually have characters and be different enough.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff, surprisingly, because I mean, it doesn't have to be.
That's the thing, it doesn't have to be.
That's a very funny thing about that, because if you look at any kind of supporting novels for, video games or other RPGs or whatever, they're just weak sauce. and they got some talented writers and keep cranking out good stuff. And they're really staying focused so that there's consistency in the universe. And that's pretty admirable.
It's not only tie-in books that are terrible trash. Now, I have been, for some reason, listening to an audiobook recently called Tamer, King of Dinosaurs, Book 1 by Michael Scott Earle. Uh-huh. I'm on Bandcamp a lot, and this just happened to pop up on the front page, and the cover image was such horrible cheese of this guy riding a dinosaur with a woman across the saddle, like ass up to the camera, giant 8-inch heels, and I'm like, okay, there's no way this can be serious. Narrator voice, it is. I am hate listening to this thing. hoping that there are nuggets to pull out for a game, and also just the ridiculous of this. Okay, you know how people complain about J.R.R. Tolkien stuff going off on food?
Mm-hmm, right.
Imagine that with women. This book literally starts with the protagonist, who works for LA County Animal Control, being called to a mansion where there is a massive pool party of only women who are described in proceedingly smaller bikinis, like, and he has to like get a rattlesnake out of that. And it's just like, this is the setup for a porno. Right. However, this is like an actual book. And then to top it off, he gets abducted by aliens and then dropped on a prehistoric planet infested with dinosaurs and also lots of beautiful women for some reason. Yeah, this book is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There are apparently five. Or
it's
more.
Yeah,
that's why I said this is book one of five, and the covers are all ridiculous. He gets progressively shirtless in all of them, which, like, yeah, I don't know. This is ridiculous, and there has to be a game idea in here.
Oh yeah,
somewhere. I mean, yeah, you know what it is? And I figured out like about five chapters in, this is someone who grew up watching way too many harem animes.
Yeah, right.
Because like as soon as the characters are introduced, you're like, I'm pretty sure I know what your deal is, because you're kind of this one dimensional, like, oh, right. Okay. We got the one who hates men over here. We got the athletic one over here. We got the dumb one over here. Okay. I know exactly where this is going. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, so pulp meets harem anime.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, we'll definitely put a link to that in the description.
No, we won't. Well, actually, you know what? It's pay what you want. So if you want to go get it, I'm not recommending it at all. But if you want something ridiculous to listen to, see how many chapters you can get through.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's a challenge, basically.
Yes, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. I'm also live tweeting it on Twitter. Yeah. Complete with GIF reactions where I'm just like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's a great idea, though.
So look for my next game.
Yes.
Which is going to be based on this.
Nice. Well, I think you could do Hollow Earth. I mean, I think you could definitely do a,
You know what? That's kind of why I picked it up. Because, I mean, when we did do Hollow Earth, it's kind of cliche. But rescuing someone from the savage kind of lizard men, whatever, like a la King Kong and stuff like that. But I think maybe getting back to a discussion we were having off mic, you kind of have to update it. I think you really have to update that for the time. And that's why I went into this thinking this is going to be tongue-in-cheek kind of cheese that kind of knows what it is. It's going to turn these tropes on its head. And no, it's not. It's completely, I guess, honest. And if there is an upside, it's that this person is apparently a New York best-selling author. But, I mean, because of the internet, you can publish something like this and people are going to find it. And if they like it, then that's great. And okay, I guess.
Right.
It's kind of like the current political climate where you're like, well, if this person can do it, what's stopping me from doing something similar?
Right.
If that's a positive message to take away from it. Yeah.
So something I saw on Kickstarter that I thought I would bring up is Sovereign Skies by Deepwater Games. So it's a 1-4 player worker placement game, and they say about 45 minutes playtime. And it reminded me very much, it's all wooden meeple kind of pieces, but it reminded me of like a travel edition of Twilight Imperium.
Really?
Yeah, because you've got a cluster of planets, and each player plays some sort of group, and you're kind of vying politically for control over these planets. Okay. And there's not like starship battle, there's not ship battles and things, but it's kind of like taking all the difficult or the things that create so many pieces for that game and just reducing it to a little pie, a little circle that you made from pie pieces. And so the configuration of the planets is different every time. They have different resources and alignments. And yeah, it looks interesting. So the description is, long ago in the time of war, 6 alien planets of the Abyssi cluster worked hard to find diplomacy and eventually to form a fragile democracy. For humankind, the discovery of a cluster could mean abundant and cheap energy in the form of a Earth-rare Atlum crystal. Now several factions are racing to grab their share. So it's kind of like, yeah, get your piece of it. You play one of the houses of old Earth that are now orbiting the 6 planets of this cluster. You're recruiting alien senators for favors and establishing occupation and constructing bases for energy and influence.
So, right. So it's not direct conflict. It's kind of more political influence.
Right. And yeah. So you're not, so you're not moving, you know, Death Star ships around and everything, but it seems like the politics, so I think there's voting and things. So I think there's the politics of Twilight Imperium made me think of that. I'm not a big fan of wooden pieces.
Oh, really?
That's kind of like Euro. That feels very like, look at it. But I don't know. I just love plastic, I guess. It looked interesting. And a couple of the previews that people had done made it look like a quick setup and a kind of satisfying in that way that you're not going to have to spend 8 hours.
Right.
And some of the satisfaction you get out of Twilight Imperium that doesn't involve so much in
minus time. The king making at the end where you're playing for like 2 hours just to see who gets second place.
Right.
Yeah. Because that was real fun. Yeah.
So we'll put a link for that in the description. And the nice thing about it is there's only two pledge levels. One is $29 and one is the retail. And so the buy-in is very cheap. And so it's a small compact game at a reasonable price, which you don't often see. And often if people do that, then they'll have the deluxe edition with rare exotic hardwoods. And, you know, it'll go into the thousands of dollars for no reason. They seem to be thinking about getting this into as many people's hands as possible. The other thing that does, though, when there's a low price point is you don't hit as many stretch goals. So they have a list of things that they may not ever come close to because no matter how many people, they're only in for $29.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't have any whales joining the party.
I guess it is the downside of small pledge levels. But mm-hmm. I mean, as you said, it gets people in. Mm-hmm. You don't really have to worry about managing all these other pledge levels and stuff. That actually sounds fun. I'm curious about how it plays with one person.
Yeah, right. I think there probably is a certain amount of randomness in decks and things that would create enough interest. And how the planets neighbor each other has an influence on each other, how you can move and what you can, because you have like resources that you spend for movement and occupation. And so that might shake out a little differently each time. So yeah, kind of like a game of solitaire. It just depends on the randomness of the deck.
I'm going to have to go look at that because that sounds fun. Yeah. Kind of reminds me of another game, Ad Astra, which I really like, which has plastic molded pieces for you Ameritrash gamers. Yeah. But it's very much a Euro game, you know, where you're just kind of like playing cards from your hand to collect resources to expand your little empire. And no direct conflict. And you score points based on like how many structures you have, how many starships you have, and how many systems you have a presence in and stuff like that. So it's fun.
So where can people find you?
You can find me and my massive Twitter rant about Tamer, King of Dinosaurs, Book 1, on Twitter. And that's at HiveMind, HYVEMYND. My Patreon is Fantastic Fate Resources at patreon.com. I also have a blog that updates somewhat infrequently, fantasticfateresources.com.
And I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon, Domestic Abuse, and you can find that at abusecartoons.com. GoComics.com is where it's syndicated, so gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And you can follow it on Twitter at abusecartoons, and of course, abusecartoons on Twitch or YouTube. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast, it's idleredhands.com. Follow us on Twitter at idleredhands. And if you want to get involved and tell us what to do and tell us what's good and what's not so good, please consider visiting patreon.com/idleredhands and becoming a patron. That helps things grow and actually be more regular and
sure you want to say that?
Improves everything greatly. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.